One could look at that passage and listen to it and think to themselves, well, what's the good news about this? It started saying we're going to die and ended saying we're going to die. So thank you for depressing me, but what's the good news of it? Every now and then I run across a passage that just absolutely stops, grabs me, and slaps me in the face and says, that makes a sermon, and it's got the outline all wrapped up into one verse. I thought it was interesting that in this particular reading, it begins talking about the fact that everybody's going to die, and it ends talking about everybody's going to die, but yet right in the middle of it, it answers a different question, because when you say, okay, thank you for telling me what I already know, all of us have experienced the death of our loved ones, the death of our relatives, the death of our friends, we read the newspaper, we see the pictures, we see all of this stuff, So help me out to understand the good side of this. And the fact is that this passage right in the middle of it takes and it actually gives us the answer to it. Somebody says, fine, so what am I going to do on this? And what I want to do is look at verse 9 again and notice what God says through the wise man, through Solomon in this, as we talk about how God expects us to get through things. He says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, and your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. So when I read this verse, what it hit me was, that's an entire sermon all wrapped up in a verse, got the outline and everything with it, where it's a pretty closed idea here, but he actually does a good job of helping us to get through things. And so what I want to talk about tonight, unfortunately, guys, basically concerns husbands, but since I want to go ahead and start with my end of it, and this verse fits, so be it, and then we'll all wear the shoes tonight and see how it fits us. But there's a lot of advice here. It's simple advice, but yet I think God's telling us some things that will help us get through life a lot better than sometimes we see people do. One of the things that we want to notice, first of all, is as we look at the verse, it just simply says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love. Now it's interesting where he says, this is an attitude of joy. In other words, this is the attitude, this is the choice that we're going to make on this. We're going to have to choose to live joyfully with our wife. Now, when we use the expression the wife, I'm not talking about like at work one time where a bunch of us were sitting around and somebody had a silly ringtone on their phone, and then somebody said, yeah, but it's better than somebody else's, and somebody else they knew had a ringtone for his phone that when it went off, it says, it's the wife, and that's what his ringtone was. I'm not talking about that kind of situation there. But notice he says, live joyfully. And to hear some guys talk, going home is kind of like, oh no, I've got to go back home. And that's what he says, is that this is not what we're supposed to be like. If you go back to verse 7 and 8, what you'll see is that he's talking about a joyful time that fits into the context of verse 9. He says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already accepted your work. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. This is not a description of mourning, folks. This is the description of joy. Drink your wine with a merry heart. Eat your bread with joy. He says, God's accepted your works. You're not wearing dark mourning garments, but your garments are going to be white, and your head isn't going to lack oil. This is supposed to be a good time that he's telling the people there. It's a lack of mourning. And what he's saying is, in verse 9 here, that if things are right, our wife is part of the good side of our life, not part of the bad side. So when we say that, and when we see that, what we're realizing is we're supposed to be glad to go home. We're supposed to be where we can say, home sweet home. we're supposed to be where as we run home, we hurry home, and then our wife hurries home, and we're both glad to get to home sweet home. That's the idea in this verse, the way God wants it. Our desire is not to be where our wife isn't. Our desire is to be where our wife is. And he says this is part of the good thing. Now, one of the things that the Bible clearly makes obvious is that it considers a wife to be a good thing. If you look over in the book of Proverbs, chapter 18, and notice in verse 22, Proverbs 18, verse 22, you know the verse, you've heard it before. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. And then without going into all of Proverbs 31, which is the worthy woman, what we realize is this guy's better off with his wife than without his wife. He says in verse 11, the heart of his husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. Usually the idea presented of wives is that, okay, the guy would have some money except his wife's out spending it all the time. It's not what, this fellow here goes through. Because he can trust his wife, he doesn't lack gain. He's better off with her than without her. In verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. He's better off with her than without her. He gives her honor. And in verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. So the fellow there has a good wife. And it goes back to this idea of live joyfully with the wife whom you love. Now, obviously, that puts an obligation on both parties. He needs to be the kind of husband she wants, and she needs to be the kind of wife he wants. Puts obligation on both of them. But it works for this folks here because they're glad to see each other, and they're both good partners to each other. Now, what this does is, this says, as I plan my life, or as I look at my life the way I'm going to do something, I've got some decisions to make on this if my life is going to fit the idea of this verse. That says that when I'm going to have to decide sometimes between home and work, not that I'm saying that the Bible's against people working hard and doing what you got to do to make a living, but I'm saying when people make career choices, do they want to be able to see their wife and their family or not? When they look at their ambitions they've got for their life in regards to this, where do you go with it? How far do you take it? But ultimately, do you want to be with your wife and with your family or not, like he's talking about? The idea of travel and associates, those who you're with, sometimes you just have to look at a job and say, what's the chances of me falling into sin and temptation on this job? And you may have to say, okay, this one just isn't right for me based on that. And none of us can tell the other one exactly how to do that, but we've got to have this as a consideration for what we do. When we talk about our hobbies, when we talk about our sports, when we talk about our interests, we talk about, do I want to be here or there or where? Ultimately, I have to always go back, and one of the things I have to deal with is, do I want to be with them or do I want to be apart with them? Because he said here, live joyfully with the wife of a youth. And ultimately, a man just a lot of times has to determine what his attitude's going to be on that. I'm not saying he has to be under feet 100%. Your marriage wouldn't survive like that, and my marriage wouldn't have survived like that for 41 years so far if I was under her feet all the time. But you have to be there. It's in some way, some manner, somehow, and you have to make a decision that you want to be with your wife, because let's face it, you picked her, you get to be with her. And he said that should be a joyful occasion for you, not a sad, terrible, oh no, I gotta go home idea. And if we do that, what's going to happen is that's going to make this life go well. That's going to get us up out of the idea of the beginning and the end of this passage. But notice the second thing is, we're just walking the verse here. He says, live joyfully with the wife. Then he says, whom you love. And in that basis there, you're into the idea of the attitude, the emotions about it now. And in this, notice that God intended for couples. His intent was for couples to be emotionally and physically involved with each other from the very, very get-go. If you go back into Genesis chapter 2, when God took a rib in verse 22 from Adam and made Eve, and Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." And the conclusion, therefore, there's the word therefore, a man, get this, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So there was a very definite intent for them to be physically, spiritually, mentally joined together to the point that he says they become one flesh. Now, just bluntly speaking, when Paul took this verse and applied it in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, what he was talking about there was the idea of being joined physically, being joined sexually, however you want to say it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, he's telling the people, don't get tied in with harlots and with adultery and fornication and so forth. He begins in verse 15, "Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? Certainly not. Or do you know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two," he says, "shall become one flesh." And he's referring back to what the verse said back in Genesis chapter 2. "But he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him." Then he says in the next verse, he starts, says, "Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body." Now the fact is, the very nature of the immorality of adultery and fornication makes that sin different than other sins, because it joins a person's body with another person's body in a way that God never ever intended, and now they're one flesh with somebody else, and that is blatantly against what God wants out of his people. And that runs counter to everything we read in this verse. But notice that when you look in the Bible, when you look at couples, what you see is people who are totally enamored and smitten with each other. And I know that sounds kind of goopy and kind of a little bit different than the way we usually talk about it from the pulpit maybe, but you look at the descriptions here. Song of Solomon, the king, the man, was smitten by his wife. In chapter 4, verse 9 and 10, he tells her, he says, "You have ravished my heart." He says, "How much better than wine is your love?" And then in chapter 7, she's looking at the fella, and what she's saying is that she's also smitten with him on that. Look at what she's telling him there in chapter 7 and in verse 10. She says, "I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me." So both this fella and her were just totally smitten with each other. So let's just make a real application here that will just fit right in with this, guys. It's really okay to look at your wife and tell her that you love her. It's really okay to look at her and tell her that she makes your heart go pitter-patter. It's okay to do that. And believe it or not, she'll probably wonder what's wrong with you, and then she'll say thank you, and it'll work. But God wants people to be close to each other. He wants couples to do that for each other and with each other. But now, for that to work, we need to understand, because God's word's a little bit deeper than that, obviously. That involves sacrifices at times. Because you get into the idea of marriage and couples working together, that certainly the idea of being close and intimate is part of it. But the idea of sacrifice is also part of it. And you say, well, that's where it's getting personal. But in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28, he said, "For husbands ought to love their own wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself." love your wife as your own body, the assumption is that people are going to love themselves, or the husbands are going to love themselves, as he talks to the wife there. Now, the world just doesn't get this kind of love. The world nowadays has got the idea of love as just all passion and hot and heavy, and that's just the way it is. But it's bigger than that, because the strict limitation of love to passion doesn't say other things that are absolutely required for your marriage to succeed. The idea is that every now and then there has to be words of sacrifice like, honey, it's okay, I'll change the baby's diaper. Things like that. Honey, it's okay, I'll take out the trash. And words like that, where a husband loves her just like he loves himself. For instance, he says, it's okay, you do deserve a new dress and a set of earrings to go with my brand new 3 suits, 2 ties, 4 shirts, and 5 pairs of shoes that I just bought yesterday. But those kind of things are what makes all of this work. And another thing that the world doesn't get about this is the idea of this solidarity. Because God's word just absolutely unequivocally says that you don't take this special mix anywhere else. You don't take this special mix and just throw it out there. In Proverbs chapter 5, beginning in verse 16, he says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Now, you think he's talking about watering for the field. No, not quite. He said, should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only for your own and not for strangers with you. Let your foundation be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving doe and a deer and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured. Enraptured, back into the emotional part there with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? So he says, a person who's married always has to know their options. And their options are, there are none. It's kind of like where Cortez took the Spaniards and fought the Aztecs. And there's a historical debate going whether he burned the boats or sunk them or whatever. Somehow or another, they ceased to be boats. And the reason is because he wanted them there. He wanted them to understand there were no options to that. And God has said, you don't do this. The world calls these things flings. They call them affairs. They have all sorts of nice terms on it. They say, well, that's just openness. And what God said in verse 20, that it's being enraptured by an immoral woman and embraced in the arms of a seductress. But that's what God expects out of this idea of the wife whom you love. So it's more than just saying, I love you, even though that's a good place to start. But the other thing he talks about, he says, all the days of your life. And that goes quickly. It really does. But when we go back to Ecclesiastes and look at our text again, where we realize that it does start a little pessimistically, because he talks about the one event happens to the righteous and to the wicked in verse 2 of our chapter, that we are in fact going to die. And then he gets down into verse 12, where he concludes this paragraph and talks about that we don't know our time. So the question is, well, what do I need to do about this? Well, what he's saying is, okay, the days that you have, the days that you have before you go to the dead, the days that you have before you go to the people, and where you no longer in verse 6, for all their love, their hatred, their envy have now perished, never more will they have a share in anything done under the sun. Before you go to those days, what he says is, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your life. He's saying, don't get depressed, just use your time. And that's where he tells us to go with this. When he talks about all the days of your life, God has always wanted people to understand a rock, a boulder, a foundation, something that's immovable. And that's one of the things he gives people and families to try to strive for in their lives. It's interesting, when you look over in the book of Hosea, when you go over there in Hosea chapter 2, God was talking to the people there, and he was making the point that there was coming a time that God was going to reach out to his people, and he was going to love them, he was going to restore them, he was going to bring them back in relationship with him. And in the process of doing that, he says, in the day that that happens, in verse 16, Hosea 2:16, he said that you will call me my husband. Because what he's going to do in the next verse, in verse 17, is take away all the names of the Baals that they had worshipped, all these foreign gods. He's going to get rid of all of those. So all of those people that they've chased, all those idolaters that they've chased and committed spiritual fornication with, he's getting rid of them. And then in this case here, what he does in the next verse, he says, okay, I'll make a covenant with you. A covenant. And what he says he's going to do in that, in verse 19, I will betroth you to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me. That betrothal, he said, would be forever. And then in verse 20, he follows it up and says, I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. So what he's telling folks here is, if you want this to work, you've got to go into this with an idea that just some things in our lives are not subject to change, whim, fad, fashion, or anything such as that. The fact is, again, just simply speaking, God gave very specific exclusions for this, where one puts away their spouse for adultery, where one spouse passes away. We understand that. That's just not the full idea of the sermon tonight. But other than that, God's saying you get one earthly life, and this is how you do it with one earthly person if things go normally. And that's what he wants us to, you start and you grow together on that. But he continues as he talks about this, and he says, for this is your portion. Your portion. This is what you get out of it. This is what's prepared for you. The New American Standard says this is your reward. So we say, well, what do I get out of this? I get to live with my wife. But it's supposed to be a good thing if it's done by what God says. God doesn't make fun of wives and husbands and marriage like it ought to be in the Bible, like so many times many people do today. But he says that your spouse, and particularly men, your wife, becomes the foundation for what you give life, that life gives you back. And so the old saying, be careful what you wish for, applies here. Be careful with that. And the reason you need to be careful with it, going back to Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 18, where we came from, he says to rejoice with the wife of our youth. Now here's the fact also that most people pick that choice early in life when they were young. Glenda and I picked it when we were 20. And it's worked pretty good. It's still going after 41. But we do that when they're young. But when we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 9, he says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your life, which he has given you under the sun. So given that the same fella wrote Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, what he's telling us is, even though he said, live joyfully with the wife of your youth in Proverbs, he's saying that he fully expects people to honor that as they go through their life with this, and to not come back with this idea, well, I was kind of young when I said that. And the reason I know that to be true also is over in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 in verse 9. He says, rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. In other words, if you're young, it's okay to be young. If you're youthful, it really is okay to be youthful. You really don't have to be as crabby as the people are who get a lot older than that. It really is okay to be young. He says, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. Go ahead and do things that are fun to do. He's really okay with that. He's saying you don't have to live like a real old person because you're not. But then he says, but know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. In other words, even though it's okay to be young, even though it's okay to be youthful, and I'm not against it, but he's saying, you're still going to be responsible for what you do. And you're still going to be held accountable, and you're still going to be held to judgment for what you do during those times. And as we see others, as we pick them or they pick us, as we choose them or they choose us, what he's saying is be careful with that, because the same writer there said, okay, you there with them for good as you go through this. You're still accountable is what he's telling us there. So this tells us something as we look in this idea and consider the fact that this is our portion in life. This is what we're going to get out of life with it. When we make that decision, understand this, what you're doing is you're setting where you're going to be for a lot of your things in life. That's just the way it is. But that shouldn't be a bad thing, because when we get into this, he says, in your vain life, all which is given you under the sun all your days, for that's your portion of life, and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Now, what the next verses tell us is the reason that that's a big deal is because life may just not go along with your plans as you might think they are. Some people work real hard in life. Some people say, okay, I want to do this, 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 and this, and they do all of these things. And they lay out and they plan their life to really great details. They have it absolutely lined up, laid out, locked in, what it's going to do and what they're going to get out of it. But when all that really happens is they realize that they locked in maybe some bad decisions or bad things to work for. Look back in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 10. He says, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. And all my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from my labor. So this guy absolutely had the world by the throat. He said, whatever my eyes desired, I didn't keep from him. I saw it, I wanted it, I took it. I didn't withhold my heart from any pleasure. I wanted to do it, I did it, I thought it'd be fun, so I went on ahead and did it. From my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward for that. So everything's great, right? Verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. What he said is, he worked real hard and went absolutely nowhere. He worked for the wrong things. And then that leads to despair, and that leads to disappointment with what we've picked. So we have to be careful with that. Because going back to Ecclesiastes 9:9, what that's going to do is that's going to say that what we see in that verse, those things that are matters of family and relations, are generally going to be what we carry through life and death, thick and thin, richer for poor, for better, for worse, all of it. So what that does is that brings up the question, when we make these major decisions in our life, We have to ask ourselves, what really is it that we are working for? What really is it that we expect to get for what we're doing? Because a lot of stuff we work for, we don't have any control over. The wise man was talking in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, beginning in verse 18. He said, I hated all my labor. Can you imagine doing something for a lot of years and building up everything, getting filthy rich, collecting everything you want to, doing everything you want to, and then you get older and look back and say, I hate my labor. How bad would that be? You say, well, what's gotten into him? He said, I hate my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he will rule over my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. If you want to know whether that worked out, ask Solomon how Rehoboam worked out. Solomon put together a huge empire that extended massive distances. And then Rehoboam came in, made a couple of bad decisions, got some bad advisors, and blew it to smithereens. His son did that to that entire kingdom and split it. What about all that labor that he did? What about that great temple that he did? That great temple later on, if you read the history of it, was used kind of as the federal deposit bank, where they would use things in the temple back and forth to pay tribute to other nations as they came in and invaded them. And all that stuff kind of went to that. And he says, who knows whether he'd be wise or a fool? And the Bible gives us that answer already pretty much pretty easy. So what he's telling us is that we need to be careful with these decisions, and we need to work the kind of decisions that's going to give us the base, that's going to give us somebody to share it with, that's going to give us a way to build and to get through this life. And he tells us in verse 10, whatever we decide to do, he said, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. If you want to know to some degree whether something is a good idea or not, ask yourself, does it pass the test of throwing everything you have at it? He says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. A lot of people get involved in things that are kind of edgy, kind of on the side. I don't really want folks to know about this, or I don't want folks to know about that, or, well, that's kind of my dark side or whatever. And they try to be real sly and secretive and shy about it, try to move away from it and not be forthright about it. And that in itself is a warning bell, because he says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. If it's good, if it's God's work, if it's God's plan, if it's God's approval, you can do it out there in the open, and you can throw everything that you have at it, and you can let your best efforts be at it. Because at the end of the time, when we see what our portion is, most of us know the difference between the pie that's full, that's steaming, that's got a big crust on it, and all of this kind of stuff, and all the spices on it, and the juices rolling out. We know the difference between that kind of a portion, and then where somebody hands us an empty pan with about 3 or 4 crumbs in it and says, here, you get to lick the pan. Now ask yourself, which one of those two portions do you want out of life? It's going to go one way or the other pretty much there, because he uses the idea of portions. Now, I know what portions are, and you do too. I know what a big portion is. I know what a little portion is. I know what a good portion is. I know what a bad portion is. You do too. And we pick that with the decisions that we make in life. We pick that when we make family decisions. We pick that when we make decisions of our youth. We also pick that when we make decisions based on obedience to God. Because those kind of decisions are critical. Those kind of decisions are often brushed off, and we'll just worry about it later. Those kind of decisions, think, well, I'll get to that when I get to it, or I'll get to that when I get around to it. And we tend to brush those off. One of the things that this same chapter talks about is, and we've already mentioned, is we just don't know what life is really going to throw at us. I think it's interesting that Ecclesiastes chapter 11 talks about trees. And he says, when a tree's going to fall, it's just going to fall. And he says, when there's clouds that look like it's going to rain, it's just going to rain. Sometimes your tree falls, sometimes it rains. And what those do is they show whether the decisions that we made are the right decisions. They show that those whether those decisions are decisions that will withstand close scrutiny. Those are where it'll show whether those decisions are the decisions that will stay with you, and that later on in eternity you will look and you will say, I'm glad I made that decision. Because that will give you a portion, that will give you a reward, that will give you a chance to say, that was a good decision I made. On the other hand, other decisions can leave you saying, that wasn't a good decision, that wasn't my best decision. And then you get into the Solomon Rehoboam thing where he says, I did all of this and I hated my labor. I can't imagine anything worse than going through life, struggling, building a massive fortune, going through and becoming the most powerful man on earth, and then realizing that you just lost it. And especially if something I did caused me later on to be in eternal punishment and realize I'm stuck with this empty pie pan for eternity. That's a terrible portion to have to go with. But that's our choices that we get to make. So we get to decide what our portion's going to be. And if our decisions are right, our portion will be great. It'll be good. It'll be magnificent. Even if the things in this life don't turn out well. Because there's a God in heaven that's going to take care of that, going to make that right, and going to give us an eternal blessed inheritance with Him. And that inheritance will be great. If you haven't decided to make your inheritance with God in heaven yet, it would be a really good time to do that. We would hear your confession of belief that Jesus is the Son of God. We would hear your confession that faith in Him, of your desire to repent of those sins, to change your life, and to be buried with your Lord in baptism. We would do that with you so that you can have that inheritance that awaits God's faithful people. And if you've wandered away, if you need to make things right, don't let stubbornness, don't let the idea to hold back and wait and just let things go for a while, don't let that hold you back from making things right. If there's any way that we can help you in these things, let us know while we stand and while we sing.